Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast where we talk about various updates and information about UConn athletics. My name is Nashawn Livingston, the talk director for WHUS, here once again with NIL professor and college sports insider Richard Kent. Now, Mr. Kent, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. And of course, we talk about various things regarding UConn from both financial and media perspectives, and it's not just the on-the-court products. So I would like to start by saying I went to Big East Media Day that was not too long ago. That was on the 21st. And for those who don't know, Big East Media Day is an annual event where coaches and basketball players across the Big East Conference come together to Madison Square Garden to give key insights and information to the media before the start of the basketball season. Every conference does this, but with the Big East, it's definitely something special.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not only the men, it's the women, all in one room and all in the greatest building there is, the Mecca of college basketball.
Absolutely. Yeah, they call it the world's most famous arena for a reason. So I would like to lead in by saying prior to the event, as we know, the Big East basketball rankings were released, and UConn, the men's basketball team, was actually picked to finish second with 4 coaches' votes behind St. John's, which was first overall with the rest of the 7. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that I think UConn is better. I could see them splitting games during the season.
Mm-hmm.
But UConn is built, I think, to go further in the tournament.
Yeah.
You've got to remember that UConn's going to play St. John's twice at Madison Square Garden, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And even though UConn travels as well as anybody except for maybe Duke, you certainly have to feel that that's a little bit of an advantage for St. John's.
Yeah.
So one of those two teams is going to win 2 out of 3 games.
Yeah, for sure. I believe that they will likely meet each other in the Big East Finals or at some point, of course. It just feels inevitable. They're the two best teams by far on paper. Creighton is in the mix, but I really do think that at the moment it seems like a 2-horse race between UConn and St. John's.
Yeah, I agree with you, except I do think we're going to see sparks of brilliance out of Villanova and Providence at various times during the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Those are teams not to be overlooked, especially Providence. I do like their roster. I believe they were picked to finish 4th, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Very talented roster. I know Kim English has had fallen on some hard times last year, had a little issues with the injury bug also. So this is kind of the make or break year for the Friars, and they have the roster to do well.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's on the hot seat at all, and they do have the roster. I love the freshman at Villanova, Caden Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I really think he's going to be a star his freshman year.
Yeah, for sure. But the preseason freshman of the year was, in fact, our own Braylon Mullins, who is unfortunately out at the moment because he has an ankle injury. He'll be out for 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I think we'll see him at the end of November, the beginning. 6 to 8, not from today, but from when the injury was announced.
Yeah.
I think we'll see him at the end of November, the beginning of December.
For sure. Unfortunately, that does mean he'll miss a couple of marquee games like BYU, Arizona, etc., and maybe even Illinois, but if that timeline holds, that means he'll be back for the Kansas game and the Florida game.
Yeah, listen, I think, and I posted it on my Twitter, by the way, at Richard3721562, I do a lot of UConn coverage. I posted it on my Twitter that I think UConn will drop 3 out of conference. I can't tell you which games it'll drop. I think the Mullins injury will probably facilitate them losing one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
But, the schedule out of conference is just tremendous.
It really is. I am more optimistic. I really do think that UConn has, like, 1 or 2 losses. I think at Kansas is probably our most likely loss because it's just on the road in, like, a very tough environment. And Kansas...
I don't love this Kansas team.
I don't either, but it's like I think Allen Fieldhouse is something that you can't really get over. It's hard. Even that UConn team in 2024, it was a hard bet. But I do think Terrace Reed matches up very nicely.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think that Terrace Reed matches up very nicely with their center, which I believe will be Flory Badunga, who's like...
You mean to tell me that Hunter Dickinson is not back for a 10th season?
Yeah, he's found something. He's at CBS Sports or whatever, like something. He needed to go on LinkedIn. That's all I know. He was there forever. But yeah, like going on to the women's side as far as preseason expectations go, the women, of course, are almost unanimously picked first. Of course, the only one that didn't vote for UConn is Gino himself, who voted for third place Seton Hall.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Big East schedule is, UConn will sweep the Big East schedule. We know that.
Yeah.
Could they lose a game regular season? Notre Dame, maybe. They're not playing South Carolina. They're not playing LSU.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be an undefeated season.
Yeah.
But, I mentioned LSU. I really think that LSU is the only team in the country that is going to seriously challenge UConn this year.
Yeah, honestly, on paper, UConn is just such a loaded roster. I know the key marquee games are UConn's opener against Louisville, which was moved from Germany to Annapolis. So they'll be playing in the States now. They also have Florida State, Ohio State. They play Notre Dame, like you said, Tennessee. That's a pretty cool non-conference schedule. I do think there's yet a team right now to have that roster that looks like they're a real threat, aside from the SEC teams that we don't play.
Yeah, candidly, I think the men have a tougher out-of-conference than the women
do. Oh, for sure, for sure. I think the men, honestly, have like one of the best non-conference schedules I've seen in a while. Maybe some people were saying ever. I'm not sure if that actually holds, but it is a very tough non-con schedule.
Yeah, Duke has one also, and so does Michigan State.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And speaking of Michigan State, we'll go a little bit later into that with the scrimmage, the secret scrimmage. But we'll go back into what I experienced at my first Big East Media Day. So, what led was the opening speech by Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman. She gave accolades to all the Big East teams who accomplished stuff that was notable. For example, St. John's for the men's side. They won the Big East tournament last year. And, of course, the UConn women's basketball team won their 12th national title, which means that UConn, both men's and women's basketball, has won a third consecutive basketball championship.
And UConn is obviously the team that the Big East is going to point to always as being, you know, their premier team,
mm-hmm.
both on the men's side and on the women's side. I think, you know, you got this little Patino blip, I think. I don't know that he's going to be around much more than two more years. And, you know, St. John's has a big donor. But just in terms of top to bottom continuity, everything, UConn is the premier program.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I do really like UConn's roster, and I do think that UConn will once again be the hallmark of success for the conference. How do you feel about the rest of the conference outside of the ones that we mentioned? So after Villanova Providence, you said that they were a little sneaky underrated.
Well, Seton Hall is horrendous. I'm going to say that right mm-hmm. now. Butler is certainly not good. Xavier has shown flashes. They might be decent. Georgetown is more talented than they were last year, mm-hmm. for sure. But I don't know. I don't see a team in the league that can win more than one NCAA game other than UConn, St. John's, and Creighton.
That's fair. So afterwards, of course, you had all the coaches come at different times for their own panels. And so I got to go see Rick Pitino's panel first. Of course, they were just answering a bunch of questions about St. John's teams. Although someone did mention a very interesting dynamic, of course, with the UConn St. John's budding rivalry, as some would call it. And Rick Pitino stated that he sees UConn fans. He said this multiple times before. He sees us as like the Kentucky of the East, where our fans are just very rabid, very passionate, will travel very well. He stated that although that is true, he doesn't see UConn as a bigger game or rival than any of the other teams that he's facing. St. John's also does have a loaded schedule. They're playing Kentucky and Atlanta, Alabama, Ole Miss, very SEC heavily, and they have the Players' Era, and I believe their opening opponent is Iowa State, if I'm correct.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, so they also do have a loaded slate, and he said that UConn to them is just another game, you know.
Yeah, I don't believe it. That's coach speak.
Of course. I like to joke that UConn's biggest rival is Rick Pitino himself.
UConn's biggest rival this year may be UConn.
Probably.
Yeah, just listen. You got a lot of pieces there.
Yep.
You got 10, 11 guys who could play at any given time. You're going to need by early January, a lineup of eight guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, of course, I'll go to Dan Hurley for a second. And Dan Hurley's response to the rivalry is that, well, when you've won six championships since the year 1999, it's hard to really see anyone as your rival, and no one's been on that level. That was the gist of it. I got to agree with that. Yeah, so of course there were a bunch of questions about Pitino. I got to go to Greg McDermott's panel, the coach for Creighton, of course. I was at his panel because he was there relatively early, and one of my friends wanted to go see him, and so I asked a question about how his roster looks. Of course, he has Creighton is the consensus third place team, as they have a talented roster. It's not as loaded as UConn's or St. John's on paper, but they do have some very nice pieces. They do have Josh Dix and Owen Freeman, both from Iowa. Those are key players in the Big Ten. And he also has Blake Harper from Howard, who was a sophomore that was highly coveted. He has some good players and transfers. I just asked how things will fit together. And he said that, of course, Owen and Josh playing together will always help. It's going to be a little bit different without having a 7-footer just right in your front court right there. One of the best centers in the country, and Ryan Kalkbrenner, who's currently on the Hornets right now. But I digress. And, of course, he also mentioned Dan Hurley and UConn after responding to a question. He said that, "We do everything well. UConn does everything well. Very respectable opponents. Never easy, of course." And, you know, the general stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so Creighton is definitely one team that I'm interested in. I do think they have potential. I don't think they're as talented on paper as UConn or St. John's. But my personal hot take is that I think Creighton could generally give St. John's a push. Like, I genuinely think that they could finish second in the Big East over them.
I don't see it.
I think it's a small possibility.
I'm going to respectfully disagree and let the games play out.
Got you. All right. And anyways, I also got to talk to different media outlets from other schools. St. John's has The Torch, which is their daily newspaper, which is basically the UConn equivalent is Daily Campus, of course. And I got to talk to WSJU, which is just like WHUS, their equivalent. And so we exchanged ideas. I will be meeting with them at a certain point about what we learned and all of that. Very nice people. Also got to talk to beat writers that talk about Rhode Island basketball. So someone from Providence and URI. So I found that very interesting, just the connections I was able to make. Yeah, and that was pretty much it until UConn came in. That was very late. You had the players, the representatives were Terrace Reed Jr., the center, Solo Ball, the shooting guard, and Alex Carabam, of course, our favorite power forward. And so I asked Terrace Reed a couple of questions regarding things about just how it was like, the difference in environment from UConn. From Michigan to UConn, he said it was obviously much more intense, a lot more effort-driven. He's really glad to be here. But, of course, you can't ignore the fact that it is just much more intense at UConn than it is at Michigan, just by virtue of culture.
Yep, I hear you.
Yeah, and I was able to get like a little call sign. He said, "You're listening to WHUS Stores." It's always something that we like to do when we go to Big East Media Day. But yeah, Dan Hurley came in and he was swamped by the media, of course.
Who had a bigger crowd, him or Pitino?
Him or Pitino? I would say, honestly, Hurley's, but he also came out later. Like, no one else was there when he came out. But, yeah, Hurley had, like, a huge crowd. He was talking about, like, of course, he promoted his book, which we'll get into later. He also talked about how serious his players are. He brought up a lot of how they don't do, like, TikTok dances and all that. He discourages them from that kind of social media when they're just around, like, when they're getting into the vibe of practice and all that.
Right.
But, yeah, that's been a lot of me talking. Is there any comments or remarks you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should move over to the Michigan State exhibition game. I know you mentioned before secret scrimmage. It was an exhibition game.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Right. An exhibition game at, I still call it the XL Center. Tell me, you were there. Does the XL Center look different inside?
It definitely does look different. The seats are much nicer. They're not just like straight up hard like bleachers. Like there's like the nice little padding right there. And they have, like, the concessions look better, and I know they have, like, the little sweet box. I never really got to go there, but...
Right. So where were you situated?
So I was actually on the band, so I was situated right next to the student section.
Okay. And how filled was the building?
The building wasn't 100% capacity, but if I had to give it a number, it was probably, like, 97 or something. 95 to 97. It was... Almost everyone was there.
Yeah, so... Listen, I think it's great that schools are playing big-time exhibition games in October, but I also see it as a signal or a precursor to a series being started. So I could see UConn and Michigan State starting a series now.
I would love an official series.
Yeah. But the series that everybody wants to see, and I know that I know behind the scenes people are trying to do it, right now are the game is Duke and UConn at Cameron and at Gamble. And I am hoping that it happens. I do think it will happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it will happen within the next year or so, or do you think it's a little later down the line?
I think in the next 2 years.
Okay, got you. That sounds very exciting. Of course, UConn was able to land a home-and-home with Kansas, which is why we're traveling to Allen Fieldhouse. Return game will likely be at Gamble, I'm assuming, or it'll be in Connecticut next year. But,
so on the exhibition game, the score, I think, you were there, I watched on TV, the score was deceptive. UConn could have won that by 20.
Yes.
Very, very easily. I mean, I think the only negative I would say is UConn maybe fouled a little bit too much and their free throw shooting was not tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, I mean, you're playing without two of your best probably five players for sure.
Yeah, two starters.
And Taris Reed and Braylon Mullins, and you beat a team that is picked to finish second in the Big Ten.
Wouldn't that be Michigan picked to finish
second? Well, yeah, I mean, very, variously Michigan and Michigan State.
Got you. Yeah, but of course, I agree with that tremendously in the sense that UConn was down two starters and cruised to victory. Of course, people say exhibitions don't matter in the sense that the raw score obviously won't affect your win-loss record, but there were things to have promise over. Final score was UConn 76, Michigan State 69, and while it does seem a little bit closer, that is an 8-point win. The game, that was about the closest the game was the entire second half. UConn,
that is easily an 80-62 game.
Yeah, it was more so that like the switching of rosters and stuff, and they played with less intensity at the end, but I do think that UConn looks very much like a good team. The main issue is simply fouling.
A good team or a great team? A great team.
I like to remain cautiously optimistic. But, yeah, UConn looks the part, like, genuinely legit, as you see. And I would say, like you said, the main issue is just fouling. I do think the refs were being a little too gun-happy with their whistles, but at the same time, I don't think they will realistically be that crazy in a regular game.
You didn't foul out of that game.
No, you had six fouls, so no one did, but it was only you were allowed six. You would have been fouled out otherwise.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Eric Reiba.
Mm-hmm.
chose the team for the Capital Classic. He was on it, and he was way better against Michigan State than he was in the Capital Classic. 7 rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just tremendous.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything starts and ends with Zoa Ball and Alex Karabian.
I don't think they both have 18. I can check the box score. Solo Ball, I was really impressed by his ability to drive to the hoop. He's gotten certainly better at that. It was like, I think his shooting from the perimeter was actually pretty poor, but I'm not worried about that from him. It was more so the fact that whenever they, like Michigan State would sell on the perimeter, Solo Ball would just go in to get the quick lay in or get like a foul called, and which I think was very, that was very much not what was, what he's done in the past, so I am very glad that he's improved on that. Karabian got his. I think he was really quiet in the first half. I was a little disappointed, but then he started like warming up. He was able to get his points. Lived on the free throw, like off the free throw line a little bit, but he was able to get his threes in, and that was it from there.
Yeah, no, I checked. Solo Ball and Karabian each had 18.
Oh, they did?
Russ had 13 coming off the bench.
Ross was very impressive. He was definitely my favorite player of the game. He wasn't the literal best, but I think I was highly impressed by how well he was doing.
And you also have to look at this stat, which is important. UConn had 16 points off of Michigan State turnovers, some of which were created by the UConn defense.
Mm-hmm. Defense has definitely improved. If they could stop fouling, they would be perfect. But quite literally, the amount of bad looks Michigan State generated, it was really good. It was really nice to see a UConn defense able to stuff an opposing offense. Michigan State did not have anything easy.
Yeah, and they didn't rebound it like a typical Izzo team.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I saw the stat. Izzo has not been to the XL Center since 1998. He hasn't played a game there since 1998.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah, it's for sure. I think it's just the fact that UConn doesn't have like oftentimes a big time home games like this. Most of the time they're like major tourney events like Maui, for example, or Battle for Atlantis.
Oh, for sure.
Which is why I'm actually kind of glad that we're not doing that anymore and we're not doing the Players Era, because we get the chance to actually see these teams in person.
Yes.
Excuse me. I think that otherwise, I wasn't really a fan of Michigan State, to be honest, because I think they just lived at the free throw line. Whatever I said about Karabian, the whole team at Michigan State did that. It was just rebound after rebound, and it would be like a foul called, and then now they get free throw shots. I didn't love their production otherwise, but I think UConn did the part.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State's a tournament team for sure.
Yeah.
And they'll probably win a game as a sixth seed, but no more.
Yeah, that's how I'm feeling. But a lot of things to be pleased about. Aside from the fouling, it was pretty much something that you want to see out of a UConn team. Course, their opener.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, UConn does not open with a rigorous game. They open next week with New Haven.
Yep.
At home. Listen, give New Haven a lot of credit for going Division One. They've got Penn State at home, which is amazing to me. They've got Columbia at home. Columbia is a decent team. UConn wins that game by 30-35.
Yeah, UConn will breeze through its first three games. That'll be New Haven, UMass Lowell, and Columbia. And then our first real test will be BYU at TD Garden in Boston.
Yeah, interesting. Obviously, they're playing in Boston for BYU because BYU has a player from there.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll certainly be a test.
For sure. I think that UConn can come out with a W right there. I am really cautiously optimistic for this team, but I do think that we can get maybe one or two losses, and that will be it.
One thing I can promise is that for the first time, I think since 2020, UConn is going to win at Seton Hall.
Until we do it, that I have to hold my tongue there, because that was a pretty bad Seton Hall team last year we lost to.
Yeah, this Seton Hall team is not much better.
I think they'll be marginally better. I think we should be favored, but there's a curse. There's something wrong with us.
Should be favored. I'm going to tell you right now, UConn's going to open as a 15.5 point favorite.
All right, then we'll see. I think that will hold.
So the question is this. This is an interesting question. How many games this season will UConn be an underdog?
According to KenPom, UConn is currently favored in every game by technicality. I think that UConn as an underdog will probably... I'll give us 2 or 3 games. So I'll say right now, I'll say at Kansas possibly. I'll say at St. John's and maybe at Creighton. I think we'll be either a...
UConn will be a 2.5 point favorite at Creighton. They will be a dog at Allen Fieldhouse by 2.5 as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say 2 or 3. I don't see many more like that. I think UConn is just that much better.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but anyways, I've talked a lot about Big East Media Day and the scrimmages. So we can go into our final segment, which are, of course, the books that recently came out on both of our coaches, written by both of them respectively. And I'll start off with the first one that came out, which was by Dan Hurley and the Athletic columnist Ian O'Connor, and it's called Never Stop: Life, Leadership, and What It Takes to Be Great. It was published on September 30th, and the book goes into detail about Hurley's personal struggles on and off the court with mental health. So you have any thoughts on that?
I have not read the book. I read the Calhoun book by Dom Amore. I've heard about the Hurley book. Obviously, it goes deep into some of his issues when he was at Seton Hall, deep into some of his issues, you know, with his dad and his brother excelling on the court and his dad excelling as a coach. And it really took some time, certainly until that first national championship to make. And I was at the Wingfoot dinner at the New York Athletic Club where Danny said, I finally arrived. His dad was in the crowd. His brother wasn't. I'm now on the same level as my dad and my brother. So that was interesting. As to the Calhoun book, you've got some real interesting introspective stories by Coach Calhoun with respect to players from all different branches of his life. He coached at a place not in Connecticut, but in Massachusetts called Westport High School.
Mm-hmm.
He coached at Northeastern, obviously coached at UConn, coached at Old Lyme High School, coached at Northeastern, and in St. Joe's, as I said, he pulls out players from all those places. Talks about from their perspective, really how much they meant to him and how much he meant to them and how gratifying it was for a number of those players. Caron Butler, let's say, is one, saying that Coach Calhoun was a father figure.
Yeah, so the name of the book, for those who don't know, is More Than a Game, How the UConn Basketball Dynasty Was Built Upon a Culture of Caring, published on October 7th. And, of course, like you said, the book goes more so into detail on how Coach Calhoun was able to mold the UConn men's program into the dominant force it was today, but not just by on-the-court success. It's by building relationships, being a great mentor, and he fostered caring relationships with very well-known UConn players. We're talking about Ray Allen, Kemba Walker, Rip Hamilton, like you said, Caron Butler. All of those people just have been influenced by Calhoun in a way that wasn't just he was our coach. He was kind of a fatherly figure in the sense.
Great anecdote by the OKC coach who was a UConn manager.
Mm-hmm.
Calhoun, 15 minutes before a UConn bus was going to leave for New York City for the Big East tournament, handed Mark the keys to his SUV and said, follow the bus. And Mark said to himself, this is the most, and it may still be the most pressure-packed moment of his life, because he said the bus driver for UConn was an absolute wild man. He had never driven Calhoun's car to begin with, or Calhoun's car into New York City, or any car into New York City. So that's really a funny anecdote.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Of course, like, the UConn coaching tree is strong. Of course, Mark Daigneault, he is the OKC coach. They just won a national title. Not a national title. They won the NBA, the NBA finals. I'm sorry. I just got college out of my mind. Of course, very impressive for a guy like just coming from UConn as a student manager. Yeah, but that story's hilarious.
Of course.
And that just makes me appreciate all that Calhoun's done. Like you said, he's from Northeastern, came to UConn in 1986 or 1987. 86. I was right. Okay, got you. So that was his only losing record at UConn, and that was a time where we were pretty bad in the Big East. We were just kind of at the bottom of the conference, and I believe 1987, he immediately won us an NIT title.
I thought it was his third year. Maybe it was his second year.
It was very soon after. But, of course, by 1990, UConn became a dominant force. That's when you have, like, the dream season. And UConn would end up losing at the Elite Eight to the buzzer beater by Christian Laettner. Of course, UConn...
Christian Laettner. I was in the stands at the Meadowlands. You have, on Friday, the Tate George shot, the perfect pass from Scott Burrell, who was a great pitcher and a great quarterback. And Cliff Ellis, the coach of Clemson, does not guard his right hand, throws a strike to Tate George in the right corner. He turns around and makes the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have the situation 2 days later where Christian Laettner is not guarded when he takes the ball out of bounds, gets the ball back, and with 2.6 seconds to go, hits a shot to beat UConn and stop UConn from going to its first Final Four.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'll correct myself. The NIT championship was in 1988. So you're right; it's third year.
Yeah. No, I knew it wasn't that. I knew it wasn't that soon. But those are great teams.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Coach Calhoun, Coach Hurley. You could not possibly have a better 1-2 punch. They will go down in history as two certainly top 10, if not top 5 coaches of all time.
Yeah, for sure. I do think that Calhoun has pretty much established his legacy. He made UConn a powerhouse, which is, for the timing back then, it was crazy. Of course, UConn won its first championship in 1999 after following one of the best Duke teams that was ever hyped up, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. And the numbers 77-74 will always be legendary in Connecticut basketball lore. I mean, just a great game. The defense by Ricky Moore was tremendous in that game. One of the five all-time greatest UConn wins games of all time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So listen, Deshaun, it's been great sharing this time with you. I'd like to, certainly a few weeks into the season, maybe, I'm not sure after which game, when we have a real feel for this UConn team, come back on with you.
Yeah, of course. That sounds like a plan. I am excited to see how the basketball season will unfold. Maybe we'll do the after BYU, after our first true test of the year, just so we'll have like a good idea of where we stand.
Yeah, sure. That makes some sense.
But anyways, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to our podcast where we go over information regarding UConn athletics, not just from the on-the-court success, but from the media and financial perspectives. My name is Nashawn Livingston here with Richard Kent, and have a good rest of your day.